I see so many people like drive crazy and like hang out their windows yelling at people on the road with like kids in the back seat. Like, talk about setting a bad example. Like, cigars are an adult product and they're enjoyed, should be enjoyed responsibly. And we it's our job as parents to set a good example and teach our children how to be responsible adults in every aspect of their lives.
Welcome to the Burning Questions Podcast, the official podcast of the Elijah Cigar Lounge in Elijah, Georgia. I'm your host, Davis Lacey. If I do my job right, every episode of the Burning Questions Podcast will feature three things: smokes, stories, and substance. Today's episode is no different, as I got the opportunity to sit down with Drew Newman, fourth generation owner of the J.C. Newman Cigar Company, which is America's oldest continuously operating cigar manufacturer. We actually recorded this episode on site at El Rollo, which is J.C. Newman's factory in Ybor City, Florida. So don't be surprised when we're talking, you hear the sounds of cigar production in the background. J.C. Newman has been around since 1895, so you better believe that they've got plenty of smokes and plenty of stories. But the thing that makes me most excited about this episode is the substance that Drew and I dive into during the course of our conversation. We talk about family, the highs and lows of life together, and how the cigar industry is like no other business culture, in the sense that family is shared as a shared connection between manufacturers, retailers, and consumers alike. Without further ado, enjoy this episode of the Burning Questions Podcast, featuring our special guest, Drew Newman.
It's great to have you and your family here at El Rollo, the last traditional cigar factory still operating not only in Cigar City, but the last big cigar factory in the country.
So the last big cigar factory in the country, oldest continually operating in the States, correct?
Yes.
Exactly. Tell me a little bit about both the history of the building itself and then the history of where we're sitting. And if our listeners are hearing some background noise, it's actually cigars being meticulously and artfully hand-rolled, which I think is a really special touch here.
That's right. Well, Tampa is Cigar City. Before cigars came here in 1886, there was pretty much nothing in this area. There was a small army fort, some people who ranched, some fishers, fishermen, and about 700 people in the area that we now know as Tampa. It was just a very rural, undeveloped area. But in 1886, Mr. Vicente Martinez Ybor decided to move his factory from Key West to Tampa. And seeing how successful he was, every other cigar manufacturer left Key West, came to Tampa, and the city just exploded. From 700 people in 1886 to 30,000 people just 15 years later by 1900, and more than 100,000 people later by 1930, making Tampa the largest city in the state of Florida at that time, all because of cigars. At its peak, Tampa had 150 large factories just like this one, making 500 million cigars by hand every year. And to put that number into context and perspective, last year there were about 430 million cigars made in the Dominican Republic, Honduras, Nicaragua, elsewhere, sold in the United States 100 years ago. 20% more than that number, 500 million cigars were made by hand just within the city limits of Tampa.
Wow.
And so if your ancestors have been here in Tampa for more than a couple generations, they rolled cigars, or they made cigar boxes, or they printed cigar labels, or they cooked lunches for the cigar workers. Our entire community was developed because of the cigar industry, which is why we're very proud that Tampa's been known as Cigar City for more than 100 years. But unfortunately, we're the last factory left. Every other factory closed or moved overseas. And so this building, our 113-year-old El Rollo cigar factory, is the last factory standing, and it's our privilege to invite you, Davis, and your customers and cigar enthusiasts from around the world to come visit us here at El Rollo in Cigar City and see this tradition that everyone can hear in the background of hand cigar making and how we're working to keep this history and this legacy alive.
So to that end, the room that we're in is the American Room. And I know a little bit of the history, but I can't tell the story like you can tell it. So tell me a little bit about the significance and the purpose of this room.
So the American was the first brand of cigars rolled when El Relo opened in 1910. Our factory was built by the Regensburg Cigar Company that had been making cigars, including a brand called the American in Manhattan, in lower Manhattan off of Canal Street, starting in the 1870s and the 1880s, and they decided to move down here to Tampa with everybody else in 1910 when this factory opened. And so as we were looking a few years ago to open our factory up to the public here in Tampa and invite people in to see cigar making, we thought that it would be wonderful to bring back the first cigar rolled when El Relo opened in 1910, bring back the American, but bring it back as the first 100% all-American cigar. And so the American is the flagship cigar made here in El Relo, and what makes it unique, Davis, is that it's 100% American. It's rolled here in the United States. Every leaf of tobacco is grown in the United States. The boxes are made in the United States with American wood. The labels are printed in America with paper made in the United States. The inks, the cellophane, the hinges, literally everything from start to finish is made in America. And this is the room where it is made. This is our hand rolling gallery. And we call it the American Room because the American is our flagship cigar from this factory.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I've tried it before, and I love it. I love the story behind it. Shameless plug here for the LJ Cigar Lounge. We are working with Louis Marshall on a plan to hopefully be in the allotment lottery at some point. We're new. We're 20 months old, but we have some goals that we're working towards, and that's one for us.
Wonderful.
Not only because the cigar is good, but we really truly believe in everything that you've just talked about. Not only the country and supporting industry here within our borders, but just the history and the bigger story, the bigger why behind the what. So really appreciate what you guys are doing there.
Well, thank you. We know there are great cigars from all around the world, and your beautiful store and lounge has great cigars from all over. What we wanted to do with the American was create a cigar made entirely from American tobacco rolled here in the United States that could just stand head and shoulders next to some of the great cigars from around the world to prove that we too can make world-class cigars here in the United States. And it's a privilege to be able to share it.
Speaking of world-class cigars, I'd love to ask you a question, kind of personal nature, just on the other end of that spectrum. You know, I could think back to my first cigar, and I thought it was really good at the time. And I've smoked it recently, and I was like, this cigar really wasn't that good. Did you have the quintessential, like, bad cigar experience, or being
no,
someone who's fourth generation in the industry, have you always had the good stuff?
So if you ask that question to my father, he'll give you a very colorful story. It was a very bad cigar experience for him. But fortunately, I was spared that. So I've grown up in this business. I've been walking around this beautiful factory since I was a toddler. I've spent so much time here, and I love it. It's a home for me. But as a kid, as a teenager, I never had a desire to sneak away and smoke a cigar. And the reason was because cigars were something that my father and grandfather smoked. And I love my dad, love my grandfather dearly, but neither was cool. Like, I didn't, like, look up to them and idolize them. It wasn't like you want to do something cool that someone you admire is doing. And so I knew I would have plenty of time to enjoy a cigar as an adult, so I just never had the urge to, like, sneak away underage and light up a cigar with my grandfather. Like, that didn't occur. And so it wasn't until I was 18 and I was visiting some family on my mom's side in Texas, and it was just a beautiful evening outside. It was in August, and I said, Dad, let's light up a cigar. And he could not have been more thrilled. The one challenge with it is that the cigar that I smoked was our Questore number 47, handmade in the Dominican Republic at Tabacalera A Fuente. A cigar that was wonderful. I thought it was outstanding, but we've discontinued it. We discontinued it about 15 years ago, and so I have a couple boxes left, but I save them. I don't smoke them very often.
Okay.
Because it was a wonderful cigar, and I miss it.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, what are some of your favorite products that J.C. Newman's doing right now? And I'd love for you just to tell our listeners, many of whom are our customers or customers at other brick-and-mortar lounges around the country, tell us a little bit about the cigar lines, the different products and approaches that you guys take to the cigars that you do presently produce.
Well, because we've been making cigars for 128 years, we've got just a treasure trove of records, of stories, of old cigars, of brands. And so what we're trying to do here at El Rollo, what we're trying to do with our company, is tell an authentic story, a story about our family, about the cigar industry, about Ybor City and Tampa. And so as we think about creating brands and making cigars, all of that is grounded in our company and family's authentic four-generation history. As a company, We make cigars in three locations. Obviously, right here, Davis, we're looking at our cigar rollers making incredible cigars by hand here in Tampa. We're also partners with the Arturo Fuente family, and they make just our incredibly elegant Diamond Crown Classic and Maximus and Julius Caesar and Black Diamond cigars and a few others for us. And we have our J.C. Newman Pensa Cigar Factory, the second largest cigar factory in the cigar city of Esteli, Nicaragua, where we make world-class cigars, including Brick House and Perla de Mar, El Baton, and Quorum as well. And so our portfolio of cigars is quite broad, just simply because we've been doing it for a very long time.
So, Drew, we our listeners, hopefully, if I do my job editing, are not going to be able to tell this, but you're a working cigar factory, and part of the beauty of what y'all are doing is you're not just a working cigar factory, but you are a destination. You're for aficionados and those who have never smoked a cigar. There's something to learn here. There's something special to experience here, and so we just had a tour group that came through to see the American Room in all of its glory, and we stopped recording, and we're picking it back up right now, and our listeners missed the sidebar conversation that you and I had, but I didn't, and it was a lot of fun. So thanks for sharing that with me.
Well, thank you, Davis. You know, we were talking a few minutes ago about how we were both in Nicaragua a few weeks ago visiting the fields and the farms and the factories down there. And it's great seeing where cigars are made, but it's a lot easier to come here to the cigar city of Tampa, where you don't need a passport, where everyone speaks the same language, you don't have to take a long flight or a long bumpy drive down the Pan American Highway like we both did, and be able to come here and learn about cigars. And so in celebration of our company's 125th anniversary, we restored El Rollo and opened it to the public, and they come. Like last year we had 15,000 visitors here.
Amazing.
Taking tours like we just saw through here, and I take a pause on the interview because They were in the American Room learning how we roll cigars, and we offer cigar rolling classes and tobacco tasting classes, and hosted 80 events last year, including 24 weddings, and just the interest keeps growing, and how exciting and wonderful it is.
Amazing. Amazing. How the tobacco tasting classes are very new for y'all. I look forward to experiencing one. We're going to be in Florida actually for a few more days after this, and I am thinking about just seeing if I can get on board with one.
Just let us know.
Tell us a little bit about what that's like for folks to be able to experience.
Well, Davis, when a customer walks into LJ and sees all the cigars you have, all the amazing cigars, you know, one sense, if you forget about the bands, they all kind of look the same. They're all cylinders, more or less. They're all different shades of brown, more or less. But what we're really seeing is you're just seeing the wrapper. What we were doing at the tobacco tasting class is peeling this back, the wrapper, peering into the cigar, and recognizing that cigars, what makes one different from another, they're blends of tobacco. And what we do as cigar makers is that we harness Mother Nature's variations in tobaccos that have different tastes, and we blend together to create unique and interesting cigars. And so the tobacco teasing class peels back the wrapper and introduces you and people to 24 different types of tobacco. Wrappers, binders, fillers, grown in different countries around the world, different seed varietals, and talks about what we do in the blending process. And it's a smoking class. So a tobacco tasting class is a basically a guided tour through tobacco. And what you smoke in that class, at least at the beginning of the class, is not a finished cigar like we're enjoying right now. What you're smoking are individual varietals of cigars, puritos, single leaves rolled up, which is what we do when we create blends, and we help guide you through that process of tasting different tobaccos and creating your own blend and understanding why this type of tobacco is different than that type of tobacco, with the goal of trying to help you discover the type of tobaccos that you like so that you can just enjoy cigars even more.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Speaking of the finished cigars that we are enjoying right now, I know that you can't share much about this one, but I just want to thank you for it because it is delightful. It's delightful.
I'll out myself here, Dave. I told you don't look at the cigar because the wrapper's not very pretty. It wasn't pulled tightly enough. Like it's not finished. It's just a prototype. But if you close your eyes and smoke it, the flavors are great. This is rolled about a year ago. It's just a prototype. Maybe we'll Gene, our manager here, who oversees all our production. I think we're gonna put these into production. You know, smoking. Hopefully later this month and introduce some maybe by the end of the year. And after you turn off the record button, I'll tell you what it is.
Okay.
But I don't want to say it right now.
Okay, fair enough.
But, you know, we think of there are two types of cigars. Cigars that you enjoy and cigars that you don't enjoy. And hopefully everyone enjoys almost every cigar they enjoy. But and I hope you're enjoying this one.
I am. Thank you very much for sharing it with me. Thank you very much for sharing it with me. So we've talked a little bit about smokes, right? And I want to get into what we do on every single episode of the Burning Questions podcast, which is talk about smokes, but also talk about stories and substance. So stories, one of the beautiful things about smoking cigars together is the stories are incredible. We just had that sidebar conversation. Yeah. And what I love about it is the stories at face value are great, but when you lean in and take time to listen to someone's story, there's a lot that we can learn from it. And so we'd love to learn from you on this episode as we get into some substance. And really, if there's a theme that might tie this episode together, it'd be family. And I think J.C. Newman, maybe more so than any other manufacturer that I work with, family is such a distinct part of y'all's story. 1895, the company was founded and has been owned. You're the fourth generation of Newman to have a stake of ownership in the company right now. So it stayed in the company, which I know has been difficult to maintain and difficult to do. And you guys have always operated within the United States of America. And so I'd love to hear from someone like yourself where your work world and your family world in a lot of ways are one and the same.
They are.
Right? And that's different than a lot of our listeners will experience. They've got work, and if work's bad, they can kind of leave it behind and come through the door and be with family, and that's probably not always the case.
I don't know what that's like.
Yeah, it's not the case for you. I'd love to hear just a little bit about maybe the highs and lows of that. So what's been most difficult about your work world and your family world basically being one and the same, and how have you navigated those challenges?
Well, I think this, you highlighted it really well, that what sets J.C. Newman apart from all the other brands, all the companies that you have, and your humor that make amazing cigars, is that we are the oldest. We're the four-generation, 128-year-old family business that has been making cigars since 1895, and we're just older than everybody else. So we've seen a lot more. We've made a lot of mistakes, learned from them, but when you light up a J.C. Newman cigar, you're lighting up a piece of our family's history, and we're very proud of our traditions. And growing up as a kid, cigars were always a part of my life. As a family business, anytime our family got together, whether it be for Thanksgiving or for birthday or whatever type of an occasion, the conversation invariably veered towards the business, towards cigars. So starting at a very, very young age, I just started listening and learning and observing and trying to soak it all in. And even though I still feel relatively young, I've seen so much in our industry, in our company, just because I grew up in it. I grew up listening to these stories, hearing about the challenges of our company during not only the most recent cigar boom, but the cigar boom in the 1990s.
Sure, sure.
And seeing how the whole industry has evolved. I think in answer to your question, though, I think one of the challenges is that we love what we do, and it's a real privilege to be in this business, but you're never really off. I'm always thinking about our company and how we can do things better and just general worries, but there's no separation between cigars and non-cigars. Even growing up as a kid, we go on a family vacation and we're going to go into the cigar shop wherever we are, whatever museum or destination that we're visiting. It's there, and so often family vacations were tied to a cigar show or something else. And so it's great. It's an extraordinary privilege being able to be in this business and continue this legacy. You know, none of us get to choose how, where, why we're born. We all just kind of show up in this world, and that's it. I mean, I had no choice whatsoever to be born here, but I'm so grateful and feel so lucky and fortunate and privileged to be able to continue this family
sure,
legacy.
Yeah.
And share it with you and everyone else.
We talked a little bit maybe some of the hard parts of never being off, but do you have any really sweet memories that you've got as well, in terms of sweet memories or just sweet aspects of having your work world also be your family world?
Sure. I mean, I spent so much time in this building and our company growing up. You know, I'm an only child. My parents always said it was cheaper to take me wherever they were going than to hire a babysitter.
Sure.
So I started going to our trade shows back when no one really cared about kids being there, when I was 6, 7, 8, 9, just tagging along with my father and grandfather. Like, and even like growing up as a kid, when I would be sick and home from school, I would just come here and like sleep on my grandfather's couch that's now in my office, because I was lucky to inherit his office, and now my kids are doing the same thing too. And when I was 11, I took my first trip down to the Dominican Republic with my father and grandfather, and just every spring break from then on, I would go down there with them, and being able to spend time with my father and grandfather and uncle and learn from them, it's wonderful. And if you ask me what the favorite part of my job is today, it's that I get to spend every day here with my dad, and it's great.
So this is a sidebar question that wasn't necessarily originally in my notes, but you saying that makes me think of some of my own story where we were talking about this off the air. You know, I've got a 5-year-old, I've got a 7-year-old. In addition to owning our shop, I also pastor a church in our town.
Right.
And a feedback point that I get a lot in a negative sense is, well, what kind of example are you setting for your kids, right? And your kids can mean my kids, it can mean the kids that are in our congregation or whatever it is in terms of your smoking. You're smoking in front of minors who are not old enough to smoke. And it seems like you've got a very different perspective on that I'm refreshed by, and would love to hear you just speak into that. What would you say to that person who's got that criticism and critique?
Do people have a glass of wine or a cocktail at dinner with their kids sitting next to them?
They do.
How is that any different than responsibly enjoying a fine cigar as an adult? You know, I think As a parent of young kids like you, Dave, my job is to set a good example
sure.
for our children, how to live a purposeful, responsible life. And I think showing being responsible is important in so many ways. You know, like you think of someone who may not either drink or smoke, but if they drive recklessly on the road with their kid in the back seat, or exhibit like road rage, or just anger or disrespect to people, like how is that a good example? It's not. So I think for us as parents, it's so important to set a good example for our children. And I think showing how an adult product, whether it can be a glass of whiskey or a fine cigar or even adult activity like driving is really important, and it shows like the next generation how responsible adults treat each other. Even just like interpersonal relations, there's so many times you think of like domestic violence.
Sure.
I hate to bring that up on a podcast about cigars, but like just showing like romantic partners, how do you be respectful of one another? Like, that is our job as parents to teach the next generation to live responsibly as adults. And I think responsibly enjoying cigars fits perfectly in that.
I do too, but you said it more eloquently than I would be able to say it possibly. So thanks for sharing your perspective with us on that. Yeah. So I took this tour last year, almost 12 months ago to the day. And even before I knew the ins and outs of the company's history like I do now, I got to read Cigar Family as a Christmas
Thank
present
you.
That my wife... Oh, are you kidding me? It was a
Thank
masterful
you.
Book. Yeah, 100%. So I got to read that book I call it this off-season because I'm a baseball guy. I kind of set my calendar by the baseball schedule. Mm-hmm. So this off-season, right, it's Christmas time, I got to read that book and learn even more about the family feel. But even before I knew all of that, coming here last year, it was incredible to me that everyone who I interacted with treated me like family and also acted like they were part of the family. Does that make sense? And those are two distinct things, but they're combined together. And so I'd love, if you don't mind, talk about how you, the Newmans, have brought others into your family that way. You treat your customers that way. You treat your employees that way. What's your company philosophy there, and how does it get put into practice?
Well, I think being 128 years old, you're talking about building on what we just talked about responsibility. You can cheat on your taxes. You can cheat on your partner. You can cheat in so many ways in life and probably get away with it for a little while. If you want to be in business for 128 years, if you want to have long-term relationships, you've got to treat people with respect and dignity. And the only reason why we're successful as a company is because of a wonderful team that we have here all around us. And as a company, our culture is to have foster long-term relationships. You know, we buy from the same group of family farmers we've been buying tobacco from for decades. Many of our team members, our employees, have been with us for 10, 20, 30 plus years. And that's wonderful, and that's what we want. Many of our customers we've been doing business with for decades. Our oldest customer we've been selling cigars to since 1898.
Wow.
Like, and they're a family business in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And that really speaks to our culture as a company. We're only successful when our suppliers, our employees, our customers are successful. And so that's just an essential part of our company culture, but it's the only way to be in business for this long.
Sure. Makes sense to me. So I mentioned Cigar Family, and so I got to read that book and got to know Stanford just a little bit, right? And I know that you don't have memories of Julius, but
no.
I know that you've got some vivid stories from
Absolutely.
Stanford. So please give me your best Stanford Newman story.
My best Stanford Newman story...
Or just a good one. I don't want to put that pressure on you.
Well, what I would say about my grandfather was that he valued quality over everything else. He never wanted to take shortcuts, and he was always willing to pay more to ensure that every cigar was perfect. Pay more for our employees. He wanted to pay more than any other factory here in Tampa. He was happy to pay more than any other factory to get the best tobacco. He wanted to pay more to get the best packaging because he recognized that premium cigars were a luxury good, that they are a first-class product. And so he was always just so well-dressed. And he really just valued quality. And that has really stuck with me. Don't take shortcuts. Don't shortchange your people, your suppliers. Just make sure if we're going to put our family name on it, if we're going to present this as our product, then it has to be perfect. And invest in the quality. And if you invest in the quality, there will always be a customer base to support it. There will always be people willing to help you make the product and make it work. And that sticks with me. There's a million ways you can cut corners with cigars. Sometimes people choose to do that, but that's not us, and that will never be us.
Amen. Amen. So, Drew, with us in LJ, we're obviously much younger and much smaller of an operation than y'all at JC Newman, but we share a lot of the same values. We're family-owned. My wife and I own it. We are family-operated, and we're family-driven. Our mission is not to sell cigars. Our mission is to create community, and that means opening up arms and extending handshakes, and whether it's an employee, whether it is a customer, whether it's a sales rep like Louis Marshall for us with y'all, which he's a gift. He's a gift of an individual. Yes. Whoever comes through our doors, we want them to say they invited me to be part of the family, and I'm part of this family now. And so we share that, I think. And I also have a sense of, at a small scale, what you're dealing with on a large scale, which there's a lot of opposition to tobacco and to the premium cigar industry, even though it's one of the most powerful tools out there to build family and to extend family. And so I'd love for you to speak to, if you don't mind, just some of the work that you do from a regulatory perspective, and help our listeners, many of whom are customers of us or customers of other brick and mortar shops, help them understand what shops like ours are up against in terms of taxation, in terms of regulation, in terms of cultural opposition, and share a little bit of the fine work that you're doing to help fight for us and fight that.
Thank you. Well, first, I'm very happy to say that here in the cigar city of Tampa, we're so fortunate that our community strongly supports the cigar industry, because it's an important part about the fabric and the history of Tampa. And so it doesn't really matter if someone's a Democrat or Republican or independent. All of the local politicians, really, with rare exception, strongly support the cigar industry and are very happy that we have this factory going. And so I think the city, the county, the state government here in Florida is very pro cigar because it's such an important part of our culture and tradition. But certainly outside of our local area, and certainly nationally, there are enormous headwinds, largely because we enjoy cigars, Davis, but by and large, a very small percentage of population, about 1% of Americans, regularly enjoy cigars. And many of them who haven't been to LJ or haven't been here to El Relo don't really understand what a handcrafted cigar is and who smokes it and who enjoys it and how they're made. And many are very quick to just lump all tobacco products together and think there's no difference than a cigar from a cigarette or from a vape. And that's really difficult for lots of reasons. First, because being an all natural product that's handcrafted, a cigar isn't a standardized product like a cigarette that's made on machine millions and millions of times, all standardized. So when an agency like the FDA wants to come in and provide some structure and regulations for the tobacco industry as a whole, we've been under tremendous threat, because the path of least resistance was for them to take this massive regulatory regime developed for cigarettes and just apply it to every type of tobacco product, including handcrafted premium cigars. And that just doesn't work in so many ways. And so it's our job to educate policymakers about what a premium cigar is and what it isn't, who uses it, who doesn't use it, and just share the facts and the research, namely showing that children do not light up premium cigars.
Sure.
They're not attracted to them. That the typical median cigar consumer enjoys 1.7 premium cigars a month, not every day, not every week. That cigars are largely enjoyed in moderation by adults for relaxation and celebration. And so what I would encourage you and cigar consumers and retailers all around the country is just share that story. Invite local leaders of both parties in just to explain what this is and really also showcase how cigars bring people together. Because we are the American Cigar Company, because I'm trained as a lawyer too, we've done a lot of work up in Washington just educating decision makers about premium cigars, because we speak the language and I can speak the regulatory language in particular, and so it's easier for us to demystify the world of cigars and explain to decision makers why treating a cigar like a cigarette and taxing it to oblivion and restricting it in so many ways just doesn't make sense or is needed for premium cigars. It's easier for us to do that than our friends who live overseas, who don't really understand our crazy political system, don't really understand how all this stuff works. And so it's our pleasure, it's our privilege, it's our responsibility to be, as a family, to be leaders on behalf of the cigar industry to try to make sure that you and I and our friends continue to have a right to be able to exercise our right to enjoy a premium cigar.
So this winter, I took many of the statistics that you just shared, although I did not know that the average cigar consumer is 1.7 cigars a month. I'm not the average cigar consumer, we'll just say that. But
that's the median, according to the FDA.
Yeah.
It's a national survey conducted by the FDA and the CDC. They've been doing it for years, and it's 1.7 a month.
That makes sense to me.
When you think about it, more often when the weather's nicer.
Correct.
Less frequently when the weather is poor. And obviously, they're very passionate consumers of bourbon who will drink a lot every day. There's very passionate consumers of McDonald's who have a Big Mac three times a day. And there are people who enjoy cigars more frequently than that as well, but the median is 1.7 a month.
So one of the things that I did this winter was write to our state legislators in Georgia. And so the majority leader of the Senate is actually our senator in the state. And then we have a brand new representative for our district. And I wrote both of them because Georgia's cigar excise tax is 23%. And pointed out that Florida doesn't have one, that Alabama's is capped at about 5 cents a cigar, 50 cents a cigar, something like that, that Tennessee is 6%, South Carolina is somewhere in that single digit percent. And just tried to say the fact that cigars alone, not pipe tobacco, not cigarettes, not vape products, cigars alone are taxed at this rate. This is nonsensical.
Right.
So I did that, and I'm going to continue to do that sort of stuff. But if it's just me doing it, it's going to be one thing. So whether it's folks in LJ that are listening, folks in Tampa, folks wherever, what would you encourage our listeners to do to say, let's be supportive of family-owned companies like J.C. Newman, like the LJ Cigar Lounge? How can they be involved in a meaningful way?
Well, I think the message, I think what you're doing is excellent. Inviting decision-makers in to LJ and to retailers to see what a premium cigar is so critical. And the discrepancy that you highlighted is a real concern, because as a brick and mortar premium cigar retailer, you're paying rent and taxes. You're employing people that live in the state and in these legislative districts, and that's really important. Small businesses drive our economy in every city, state, throughout the country, and it's really hard for small businesses to compete when you're at a structural disadvantage. When someone can go online and buy a cigar, or go online and buy anything on Amazon and it shows up the next day and not subject to state cigar taxes, that's a real disadvantage. And I think when we put it in terms of small businesses and the competitive disadvantage, it's easier for legislators to understand that a 23% cigar tax means that the state of Georgia is giving benefit to out-of-state cigar retailers at the expense of their own constituents, at the expense of the small businesses like yours that are paying taxes, employing people, invested in the community. And so when I think about state cigar taxes, I really think about it in terms of competitiveness and making sure that the retailers can compete against online and out-of-state dealers. You know, our trade associations have done a lot of work on this, including encouraging a growing number of states to implement tax caps of 25 cents or 50 cents a cigar, so the states can collect a reasonable amount of tax for sure, but have it capped so that people are still incentivized to come and support brick and mortar, and we need more of that. And so if we can help you in any way, reach out with the decision makers in Georgia. It seems like Georgia is a perfect state where a cigar tax cap makes sense.
It does.
The state can still collect the revenue that it needs, but not do so in a way that advantages out-of-state cigar shops, which is not, I'm sure, is not what anyone in the Georgia legislature wants.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, brother, I appreciate your time today. I know that you're a busy man, and I know that this did not come at a no-cost decision for you, so thank you for taking time to speak with me and to speak with our listeners. I really appreciate it.
This is a privilege. And it's just so grateful to have you and your team here, Davis. And just our door is always open. The factory door is always open. And hopefully you guys will come back again next year and encourage all cigar consumers and enthusiasts to come here to the Cigar City to experience the American historic cigar tradition and see how we're working to keep it alive.
We will. I received that invite, and I'll pass along to the good folks in LJ.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Burning Question Podcast. Drew, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Davis.
Thanks so much for listening to this conversation with Drew Newman. Be sure to visit jcnewman.com to learn more about America's oldest cigar manufacturer and the family behind the operation. I'd also invite you to visit LJCigars.com to learn more about the LJ Cigar Lounge, or follow us at LJ Cigars on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love to light up a J.C. Newman cigar with you soon, be it a Brick House, a Diamond Crown Maximus, or a Julius Caesar. But until we're able to meet for a smoke at the lounge, please head to BurningQuestionsPodcast.com to subscribe for future podcast episodes and to learn more about asking your questions on the podcast. On behalf of our family here at the LJ Cigar Lounge, this is Davis Lacey. We'll catch you next time on the Burning Questions Podcast.